Good morning, everybody. My name is Damon Abdi. I'm a graduate student working for Dr. Tom Fernandez at Michigan State, and today I will be presenting about some work we did on some bioreactors testing nutrient remediation both with the presence and without the presence of the organophosphate chlorpyrifos. So agriculture as a whole requires the use of fertilizers and pesticides to grow a sustainable, sellable crop, and no sector of that puts down more of these compounds than the nursery industry on a per-area basis. And this is great for pushing growth. However, we also get it where we do not want it. So fertilizer, specifically the nutrients and the nitrates and the phosphorus coming out of these production areas, lead to algal growth in waterways. Now, this is well documented throughout the world with hypoxic zones, notably in the Gulf of Mexico, the Baltic Sea, and close to home in the Great Lakes. So phosphorus is typically the limiting nutrient where levels of as low as 0.5 parts per million is capable of spurring algal growth, but depending on what the ratio is between the nitrates and the phosphorus, this can be reversed. It's a 16-to-1 ratio, depending on that, known as the Redfield ratio. Furthermore, the EPA maximum contaminant load for nitrates is set at 10 parts per million. For human health concerns, notably methemoglobinemia, which is otherwise known as blue baby syndrome. Also, aside from fertilizers, we're also going to find pesticides such as chlorpyrifos in runoff water. Now, chlorpyrifos is the active ingredient in insecticides such as Lorsban and Dursban and is up for re-registration by the EPA right now. Its use is concentrated here in the upper Midwest, and it has the potential to get into our waterways. The solubility of chlorpyrifos is about 1.34 parts per million, and has a high K factor, suggesting it's going to bind to soils so it can travel with eroded sediments as well. So the ways in which we can treat runoff is dependent upon what we're trying to accomplish. With nitrates, which are highly soluble, those are going to travel with water, and we need to remediate that typically through what we like to do is through biological processes such as denitrification. So on the left, we see a lined pit filled with wood chips. Now, the wood chips serve as a carbon source for naturally occurring microbial communities to reduce nitrates down to dinitrogen gas, the largest constituent of our atmosphere. And then that is effective in reducing nitrates in by up to 90% in as little as 30 minutes in a flow-through system. Depending on how much runoff is coming from a production area, you may want to scale your hydraulic retention time or the amount of time you're going to allow this water to sit in these treatment units for larger periods of time than that. Now, as nitrate is very soluble and is going to travel with water, phosphorus is very likely to bind to sediments. So the transport of phosphorus is going to come in erosive properties. One of the methods, as Lauren mentioned earlier, is constructed wetland systems. On the right, we have a constructed wetland system in Virginia. But she mentioned that one of the issues with that is that you're sequestering the phosphorus, but when those plants senesce, it's still going to be re-released. So a harvest is necessary in order to fully close the transport of this phosphorus so it does not appear downstream. One alternative to using constructed wetland systems is the use of passing water through a sorptive material such as a calcined aggregate, which I will cover later. So what we wanted to do is we wanted to scale these treatment units down into something that we could study in a greenhouse. So at our greenhouses at the Horticulture Teaching and Research Center in Michigan State, we constructed 20 bioreactors using 18-gallon bins, and we created a nutrient-enriched simulated runoff with levels of 70 to 90 parts per million of nitrate and 2 to 3 parts per million of phosphorus. And we passed these through all the bioreactors for 4 gallons every single day to achieve our 3-day hydraulic retention time. Our treatment methods were passing the water first through a hardwood chip substrate in the top bioreactors, and then we passed it through, we screened two different calcined aggregates for phosphorus absorption capacity as well. Our control was a nutrient-only feed, and then our experimental treatment was the same nutrient feed supplemented with 1 part per million of chlorpyrifos in the form of Lorsban 4E. What we did is we passed it through a dosatron injector. We had one dosatron injector for fertilizer, and then we had a second dosatron injector for the chlorpyrifos injection as well. So what the first part is, we pumped this simulated runoff through a check valve to prevent cross-contamination, where the water was then pumped to the base of this bin to put it at the bottom. And as we kept continually pumping in these 4 gallons each day, we were pushing the previous day's water out through the outflow port here, where it could then drain down here, and we collected the first 500 milliliters for sampling. We then, after collection, we would then pass it through, we would then allow the rest of the treated water to pass through the calcined aggregate bin, where we again collected the first 500 milliliters and sampled that as well. Our wood chip bioreactors were created through a hard wood chip mix that we found from a local landscape supplier. And then our two calcined aggregates that we chose were Haydite and Turfis MVP. Now, a calcined aggregate is a superheated particle, which I like to make the metaphor with thinking of it as popcorn. By superheating popcorn, you're expanding the surface area, just as by superheating these aggregates, you're expanding the surface area for that too. Haydite is an expanded shale product, and then Turfis MVP is an expanded clay product. In these bins, we put this baffle there, the white board separating that, to slow down the flow and to allow more percolation throughout the substrates. For our water sampling, we collected information on the oxidation reduction potential, the dissolved oxygen levels, as well as the pH, and then we sampled for nitrate levels and phosphorus levels. Throughout the first 12 sample weeks, or the first 97 days of this study, we noticed some trends where both the calcined aggregates, the calcined clay, and the haydite, shown in red, exhibited similar levels of ORP, whereas the wood chips were rising as time went on. This is all prior to chlorpyrifos implementation. This is all treatments receiving a nutrient-only feed. Dissolved oxygen over time was also decreasing, and the pH was showing that mirror image of the ORP. And at this point, we had built up what appeared to be a pretty robust microbial community in our wood chip bioreactors, further corroborated by reducing that 70 to 90 parts per million down to below 1 part per million. Our detection limit was 0.2 parts per million, and oftentimes after the first sample day, where the average was 3 parts per million, we are typically able to reduce the nitrates down below detection. The phosphorus remediation potential of these two sorptive aggregates were different at almost every level, save for day 31, and we found that the calcined clay was actually exporting some phosphorus, whereas the haydite was consistently remediating the phosphorus levels down below detection. We compared the pre-samples of how much phosphorus was found in each of these calcined aggregates. In the calcined clay, it was 48 parts per million. In the haydite, it was 2 parts per million, which helps explain why we saw this loading in the effluent. So after day 97, we started implementing chlorpyrifos to half of these treatments, and in the wood chips, with the nutrient-only feed being the solid green line, and the nutrients and chlorpyrifos feed in the dashed line, we saw differences on the first and the last day of sampling post-chlorpyrifos implementation between these two treatments. For ORP, we did not, in dissolved oxygen, we never saw any differences. And then for pH, we saw again that mirror inverse image for where the first and the last day post-chlorpyrifos was different. However, this was not indicative of the potential for these treatments to be effective in the presence of chlorpyrifos, whereas the nitrate levels were consistently below 1 part per million, despite the presence of chlorpyrifos. Additionally, with the calcined aggregate, we found that there were differences in the ORP between chlorpyrifos-infused treatments and the nutrient-only treatments, where it was different on almost every sample day, and we saw differences with the presence of chlorpyrifos for ORP. We didn't see any differences in dissolved oxygen between these treatments, and we saw again that mirror image with the pH. And then in the terms of the phosphorus levels, we did not see any difference on the treatment efficacy of either of these aggregates in the presence of chlorpyrifos. Haidite still was very effective in remediating phosphorus from the simulated runoff, and calcined clay still was exporting phosphorus nonetheless. So the big take-home message from this study was that the wood chip treatments were quite effective in remediating the nitrates. We were able to get from that 70 to 90 parts per million to below detection. And for the phosphorus, haidite was very effective in absorption of phosphorus, where that was also being brought down below detection. Chlorpyrifos did affect the characteristics of the water, but this was not realized in the nutrient effluent either. So in conclusion, chlorpyrifos at levels of 1 part per million did not seem to have a detrimental effect on the treatment efficacies of any of these treatments. Calcined clay was not an effective phosphorus sorption material, at least the calcined clay that we used, Turfis MVP, in this study, and that haidite was very effective. Also, at the conclusion of this study, on day 150, haidite was still able to remediate phosphorus without showing signs of saturation. It was still consistently below detection level. This project was made possible through many of the granting agencies. I'd like to call attention to the Clean Water 3 grant, where many people here are involved with that, and I highly recommend checking out cleanwater3.org to be up to date on all the research that is going on there. Additionally, I'd like to thank Project Green, USDA, and Michigan Department of Agriculture and Rural Development. And I'd like to thank the nutrient analysis crew at Virginia Tech, specifically Julie Brindley and Anna Polk, for their great effort in being able to help with this. And I'd also like to thank Deborah Trelsed and Dan Court, two people who were essential in keeping this project running. Thank you. And if anyone has any questions, I'd be more than happy to answer.